Oh, you know what that means. When the bass kicks in, it's time for DLC, your downloadable content for the week. DLC delivered the way it's meant to be, completely free. And that's thanks to our sponsors this week, MailChimp, Shopify, and Mac Mini Colo. They are the ones who made that possible, bringing the show to you completely free. DLC, the show, all about gaming in its many forms, games played on desktops, laptops, and consoles, and also games that involve dice, luck, and cardboard. I am your host, Jeff 2N1T Kanata, and I'm joined, as always, by my friend, slash co-host, slash nemesis, the guy who is already in line for Comic-Con 2015, Christian Spicer. Hello, Christian.
Hey, Jeff, I'm here in Hall H line. Oh, we already did that bit for Double Jump. yes, hi, hello, S-P-I-C-E-R on Twitter. Happy to be here. Early morning, we're doing it.
Yeah, a little earlier. I have an audition today, so let's all hope I get it, or else this would be a fool's errand that inconvenienced everyone for no reason whatsoever. But that's okay. DLC is your downloadable Kanata. It's your downloadable Christian. But this week, because I can't resist, and I hope I get forgiven, DLC stands for Don't Leave Comcast.
Oh.
I know, it's ridiculous. Listen, if you don't know who this person is, you don't need me to introduce her. It means you've been living under a rock, because it's the internet's own Veronica Belmont.
Hello, gentlemen. How are you? I feel like I need a fancy way to say my last name. Like Veronica B-E-1-L-M-O-N-T.
Well, it's just because everybody knows how to spell Belmont, and most people, there's so many people who are like, you know, tweeting at Jeff C-A-N-A-T-A, and that there's a fake Twitter account of that guy that just kind of refers people to me. So that's why I do that.
Anyway. I dig it.
Well, thank you. Well, we dig you being with us today. Thanks for stopping by. We are going to jump right in because it was Comic-Con week. There's some cool news out there. So let's get to Story of the Week.
Story of the Week. It's the Story of the Week.
Story of the Week, of course, the part of the show where we decide what the most important story of the week was. And as a listener of the show, you can submit stories for our consideration. You can do so using the hashtag DLCSOTW. That's DLC Story of the Week. Or use our subreddit at reddit.com/r/5x5DLC. Veronica, now would be the time. I appreciate it. Well, I'm curious, what is your Story of the Week?
The Mako is returning!
Oh, yes! Big Comic-Con news from the Mass Effect panel. They said, yes, in the next Mass Effect, the little four-wheel drive Land Rover that could is coming
it,
back.
You love it, you hate it. It was in the game, and it's coming back.
Are you excited about this, or are you worried?
I actually really enjoyed the planet side, like little side missions with the Mako. So I'm actually pretty excited about it. I think it's a throwback to an earlier time. Things were simpler. It was before all the Mass Effect crazy ending drama went down. Yeah. You know, I feel like we're really returning to a simpler time with the Mako. We can travel
a simpler
back
time,
in it.
Maybe a more difficult to control time.
Slightly more difficult to control. A little bit weird in that regard, but otherwise, you know, a very cool piece of sci-fi video game history.
Yeah, well, they assured everybody on the panel that they have learned their lesson, that the ship will be controllable, will not be frustrating. And they also emphasized that it's going to be customizable. They said you're going to be spending a lot of time in the Mako this time around.
And money.
And you're talking about microtransactions, Christian?
Yeah, maybe.
And you'll be able to exploration will be a big part of this new Mass Effect. And so you're going to be, you know, exploring the surface of planets, and you're going to be able to customize this Mako. The bummer is it sounds like this game is really, really far off still.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's actually 2015, but the problem is they're driving it over to 2014 in a Mako. So it's taking them forever.
The controls are a little wonky. They're still working out some of the kinks, some of the bugs. But they'll get there eventually is what matters.
Are you a big Mass Effect fan, Veronica?
Oh, huge Mass Effect fan. Yeah, I've got my my N7 sweatshirt is in the closet right now, right next to me. But I wear it all the time, and I love Shepard's one of my favorite characters in video games. And it sounds like this next game is going to be in that timeline in her lifetime. Sorry, I say her, but not going to feature Shepard. So I'm interested to see how they kind of take the storyline. I mean, there's so much in the world; it's such a rich environment. They could really do pretty much anything. But of course, I will definitely be in line to get that game when it comes out.
Yeah, I think that's a really interesting tidbit of news that it seems to be the case that it's during Shepard's timeline, which I would assume, being a video game, that I'm going to be saving the world. Meanwhile, this other dude or dudette, Shepard, is off saving the universe in his own way, or her own way. It's a little strange to me that they would choose to have it be concurrent, but maybe we'll see how that works out.
So is it concurrent to the original game storyline, or is it concurrent to just Shepard's lifetime? Because things could be happening. Yeah, I don't know.
That might be more accurate, that it's not actually happening at the same time. It's just not, we're not 1,000 years in the future, 1,000 years in the past, or anything like that. Yeah.
I kind of like the idea that, there's more than one, and you might not even know the other person's there, but the idea that Spider-Man, to use a comic example, right, is saving the world from Green Goblin's plan. Meanwhile, on the other side of the Earth, the X-Men are saving the world from Magneto's evil plan. I kind of like the idea that, and I don't know if they'd ever do this because of how the original trilogy wrapped up, but if you have these two people that both think they're the singular hero saving the world,
yeah, right.
Well, I mean, if we go back to Mass Effect 3, remember Shepard was a bit of a celebrity in that storyline, and
right.
Everyone kind of knew who she was, and so in a way it kind of makes sense, because you can be another character as part of that world and be hearing about all of Shepard's exploits and seeing it come up on the broadcasts and on the radio or wherever, and so you can be part of that story still without actually being involved in what's going on in the previous games.
Kind of reminds me of what they did with the Bourne movies when they brought in Jeremy Renner to be like B-list Bourne, who's actually doing stuff while real Bourne is Bourning it up.
The tagline for that movie was there was never just one,
right.
Except that there was for the first three movies.
Right.
Except where you named it after that guy.
Yeah, exactly. That's funny. Yeah. Awesome. Christian, what is your story of the week contender?
There's a lot of fun stuff, I think, that came out of Comic-Con. I think the biggest news out of Comic-Con, though, is the lack of what I would consider actual megaton gaming news. For a time, there was, some pretty big drops that would happen at Comic-Con this year. There were some smaller things that, I think we can get into. But for me, the thing I want to highlight is coming out that Bravely Default has sold 1 million copies.
Yeah. That's kind of cool news.
Yeah, I think that's great. I mean, I think it's a great pat on the back for a, type of game. I know you're all up on Divinity, and I think Bravely Default is in its own way, a throwback to that style of JRPG and on the 3DS. And it's just, the little game that could. You don't see a big marketing budget for it, but it's a quality game, and people keep talking about it, and people are buying it. And so I think things like
that. Are you one of those people?
Man, I picked it up. Best Buy had that buy one, get one free sale. It might still be going if you're listening to this. I forget, but I picked up that as my free game, and I've yet to open it. It's daunting. It's intimidating. I'm going to be in Salt Lake City for comedy shows the end of September, so I'm saving it for that trip, but I always fear with that type of game that I'll play it, get 5 hours in, and then get distracted, and then get back to it and be like, where am I? What's happening? But I've heard nothing but the best things about it, so I'm excited.
Veronica, are you a JRPG fan or more of the Western RPG variety like Mass Effect?
Yeah, definitely more of the Western style. I've dabbled in JRPGs in the past, but they're time sinks.
Yeah, for sure.
But they are beautiful. They tend to be just so epic in their way, too, that I do really enjoy them when I get my hands on them.
Yeah, it's pretty cool that this game sold so many. I had no idea. And maybe it will get more people to play it. I'm definitely interested in giving it a shot. Speaking of beautiful Japanese role-playing games, another tidbit of news from Comic-Con is this really interesting redesign of Batman that the Tetsuya Nomura made. He's the guy who created Kingdom Hearts, or designed Kingdom Hearts, and was one of the original Final Fantasy creators. It's pretty insane. It's
kind of terrifying.
Yeah.
It's vaguely terrifying to look at.
I think that if someone said, this is a superhero redesign, which superhero is it? I think it would be hard-pressed to come up with Batman. I think it's not clear.
Well, the wings. I mean, if you can call them wings, I guess. The cape that kind of looks like wings. Yeah, I don't know. With the wings, arms and the... Oh, it's... Yeah. I would not want to bump into this thing in a dark alley.
Oh, for sure. Or I wouldn't even want my enemy to summon it in Final Fantasy. Which is really what it looks like. Mm-hmm. Which makes sense. But I guess they're making a line of toys based around these redesigns, and they're going to do a whole run of different Batman characters, of which this is just the first. So it's going to be interesting to see. I dig people kind of iterating on established designs. I just didn't really respond to it too much because it's so different that it doesn't even invoke Batman for me, you know.
Well, what if I said it was a nightmare version of Batman Beyond?
Yeah, it definitely looks more like that for sure. Yeah,
I mean, I picture it being, you know, Bruce in the Beyond suit before he hung it up and gave it to Terry. It's like his last aid, you know, his last days in that. And I was like, oh, I get it. But he also said, you know, if you see Kingdom Hearts resemblances in this, you know, armor, that he was toying with this design before Kingdom Hearts came out. So, like, when I saw that little snippet of interview, I was like, so how much of this is just a cool design you had?
Yeah, right.
It's Batman.
Yeah, just paint it black, make it Batman. Good to go.
But man, the Square toys, they're so awesome. I have a couple of the Metal Gear ones, and I didn't go to Comic-Con this year, which I'm not wholly disappointed by because it's a lot of work. Mm-hmm. But their toys are always...
Or your cosplay was of someone who didn't go to Comic-Con, and you're just so committed to that costume.
Right.
Right?
No. Exactly. It's exactly it.
Sorry, go ahead. What were you saying?
I was saying the Square, their toys are always just top notch, like really, really great. You know, even the actual production when they come out. So if, you know, this Batman figure speaks to people and you're hesitant and you haven't bought a Square Enix toy before, it will be as good as it looks. And if you're interested, I would jump on the pre-order as soon as it's available, because a lot of their limited stuff sells out quickly.
Yeah, some other interesting Comic-Con news. In fact, I would say this is my story of the week. The Halo Nightfall trailer debuted at Comic-Con, which is the Microsoft saying, we're doing TV. And then they go, nah, we're not doing TV. Oh, wait, we're still doing Halo. So this was a debut of that Halo TV series produced by Ridley Scott. And it showed, you know, not a ton, but it showed some live action footage of people who are Halo-esque, I guess. I think this is very similar to the Batman redesign thing. Like, if someone showed me this trailer and it didn't say Halo at the end, I wouldn't go, oh my God, a Halo TV series.
Well, we see some recognizable weaponry, I think.
Yeah,
but otherwise,
true.
I think that's really, and the music is really the only big tells in the short, like, minute long clip that we've seen, that it really is Halo related.
Right. I mean, it doesn't look like what's his name? The District 9 guy, when he was making his Halo movie and they were putting out the concept art and the designs and stuff, it looked so Halo-y to me. Maybe the budget of a TV show doesn't support that, but I felt like, I wish this felt a little more like the game, but maybe I'm being
too
critical.
Oh man, I wanted that Neil Blomkamp, I can never say his name.
Blomkamp.
That looked so awesome. Right? His Halo stuff, man. Yeah. Should have been a thing.
Yeah.
I feel like this, and maybe it is that, you know, it's a TV curse or whatever, where I think they almost need to set up their own identity. But at the same time, Halo is so iconic as Master Chief that when you see something that isn't Master Chief, you're like, that doesn't really look like Halo. I mean, Halo is Master Chief and Warthogs to me. Like, that's the iconic things of Halo. And, you know, I think you have this problem, and maybe even, you know, Bungie and people that were handling the franchise ran into it themselves with things like ODST. It's like, okay, this isn't Master Chief. Mm-hmm. I mean, you look just like him, but you're a little shorter and you're a little weaker. Okay, Halo Reach, you're not Master Chief. You're a group of four people that look just like that armor is so iconic that I think anytime you do something outside of it, you're kind of like, when you play those games, anyone outside that armor is people that just go to the flank and get killed.
Yeah, it's kind of like Marvel's Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. It's like, what do people love about Marvel? Superheroes. Awesome. Okay, we have this TV show. There's no superheroes in it, but it's a bunch of people in suits.
I love Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., so I can't knock it too much. But I think, this kind of harkens back to what we were talking about earlier in terms of these, working in this existing universe and seeing what else is out there. And yes, there is an existing storyline in place, but there's so much more happening in the world. And maybe a lot of that is, related to what's going on, but it's other parts that we haven't seen, haven't explored, other characters that are having an impact on the storyline, because, we have Locke in the storyline and as a playable part. So it's just interesting how all of it kind of fleshes out. You're able to work with the existing parameters, but kind of say more about the story than we saw in previous portions.
Yeah, evidently the official line is that, as you said, Agent Locke, and they're investigating the Office of Naval Intelligence, is investigating terrorist activity on a distant planet of Cedra. I haven't really read the books or anything, so I don't know if Cedra is a thing, or maybe it's all brand new for the show. But I do agree that in the same way that Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. expanded that universe and gave us more information about what's going on between movies, I think it's really cool to have a TV show giving us more information of what's going on between games. And this is really trying to bridge the gap between Halo 4 and the upcoming Halo 5 Guardians. So that's cool.
Yeah, and I mean, think about all the novelizations that we run into, not just with Halo, but with the Star Wars universe and Star Trek and Warhammer even. There's all these novelizations of things that we play, and being able to do that in the TV space, I think, is really cool.
Yeah. But yeah, I think this is potentially going to be very cool. It's weird. The mixed messaging from Microsoft is the weird part, is, this big initiative to make all these shows, then no, we're not doing that. We're only going to do a couple of shows. And then we're making a big deal at Comic-Con about this one show. It feels like, well, I want to be excited about this show, but does it really have the full backing? Or is it sort of like, yeah, we were already too far down the line on this, I don't know.
Yeah. Well, I guess to use the oft used phrase, I guess we'll just have to wait and see.
Yes, indeed. Yes, indeed. Speaking of waiting and seeing, for no particular reason, this is an interesting story submitted by at Acorn Aho, who pointed to us to a story on VentureBeat about GameStop. It was an interview with GameStop president Tony Bartel, who said, "Hey, guess what? Only 40% of our customers know that GameStop sells, or you can trade in your games.
You can trade in, yeah,
yeah."
This was really surprising to me, because when I think of GameStop, I think of that as the place I go to sell my used games.
Well, because when they answer the phone, they go, "Hello, GameStop, the place where you can sell and trade in your new used games for up to 20%. Blah, blah, blah." They're constantly hammering that message. So, you can't avoid it if you step foot in the store.
I know. And, I wonder if things have changed a little bit, because it's so easy to download games that maybe people don't think about trade-ins as often as they used to when we were using physical media like 100% of the time. Maybe that's not at the forefront of our minds anymore when we think about video games, because back in the day, I mean, that's all we did was you had to go to a brick and mortar store, you had to buy your cartridge, and then when you got sick of that game, you brought it back and traded like five of them in to get a new one. Yeah. And we don't do that as much anymore, but I still have that mindset for sure, because I'm selling games all the time still.
So let me ask you this question. Do you believe this guy?
What, that only 40% know about it?
Yeah, I have a hard time even just swallowing that statistic from this dude.
Well, it seems like a weird thing to want to tell people if it's not true.
Right.
Like, why would he be saying that? I mean, if it's not true and more people know about it, then he wouldn't have to say this, because people would know about it and they would be using it regularly. But now he's kind of like, "Hey guys, only 40% of you are doing this. you know, please continue to bring in your games to trade in. It's keeping this like aftermarket, you know, situation alive and working in our system. And I don't know why he would lie about that.
Well,
why do you think he would make it up?
Well, there is sort of this bad rap that they get, justified or unjustified, that, you know, from game publishers of like,
from
you know,
publishers.
All the games that you resell, we're not getting a penny of, and you're, you know, they keep posting these quarterly gains, you know, these crazy revenue numbers. And maybe that's his way of kind of diminishing that and saying, hey, guess what? So few people do this. Because he also mentions, you know, that 70% of the trading credit goes right back into purchasing new games. I don't mean to cast aspersions on the guy. I would like to take him at his word. I just find it so hard to believe that so 60% of the people that patronize his establishment are unaware that they can do that. It's just crazy to me.
It's like if you go there in person, you're going to see the signs. I mean, the signs are everywhere.
Yeah.
So I don't know. I mean, there's whole racks of used games. So
I mean, part of the reason that it's hard to go into a GameStop is because they are just so, would you like to pre-order a game? Would you like to trade in? Is there anything else you would like to trade in? Would you like to, and it's just like, okay, just give me a break, man. I just wanted to buy, you know, the new game. I don't need you to keep hammering me on this.
So you actually go in person now to buy games
instead yeah, like
of ordering
grandpa.
On Amazon? I'm genuinely curious.
No, I mostly buy games through Steam if I can,
yeah.
or downloading them on my, you know, Xbox or PS4. But I must say that if I really want a game day one, I don't do it Amazon because I'm sitting around my house all day going, when is the Amazon truck going to arrive? When is UPS going to be here? And that is not fun.
Yeah. You guys don't have a doorman down in LA yet, do you?
What's doorman?
Doorman. It's an app. And it's very useful if you live in a place where you're scared of your packages getting stolen and you don't have an office.
Yeah.
It's kind of like having a PO box, except they bring the stuff to you when you want them to in the evening. I think it's just in the Bay Area right now.
That's awesome.
But it's super helpful because I order a lot of stuff on Amazon. In my old apartment, stuff is getting stolen all the time. And so I was looking into solutions to not have that happen anymore. And a doorman popped up and it's been great. It's like $3 for a package delivery and you can choose what time of night you want them to come. They'll come up until midnight.
Wow.
So you can make sure you're home when the packages show
cool.
up. And so you can get like 3 packages delivered for $3, any size.
Wow.
So it's kind of nice if you order a lot of stuff online. I'm not an advisor. I have no affiliation with them whatsoever. I just use the product and it's been helpful to not get stuff stolen.
It's only in San Francisco
including
right now?
Video games. I think so. Yeah.
Wow. Crazy. To be fair too, there's a bunch of people in the chat room right now, talking about how their GameStops aren't pushy. Tondagosa here is talking about how he's got he's got a good GameStop, and Mr. Kelso says the guy at his GameStop is really cool. So I probably shouldn't paint with such a broad brush either, but I have to say the ones that I've gone to in Los Angeles have been mostly annoying. And there's also that weird thing of like walking in on day one and going, hey, I want to buy Last of Us, just came out today. Can I buy that? Did you pre-order it? Nope, just want to buy it, and then you can't have it. Oh, so you don't have product for people that just walk into your store. It's only this weird club that you've established that I need to have pre-ordered in order to buy it today. All that stuff really bothers me. So,
can you hear me, Jeff?
Yes, thank you for coming.
We hear
back,
you.
Christian. Welcome back.
I was the goat. I was commenting, and then apparently Zach was like, "No one can hear you."
I bet it was amazing what you were saying, though.
Pretty much. I was dropping some gems. I did disappear for a little bit. But I think the biggest thing of this GameStop stuff is that 60% of their audience, they might tell you, and I know, Veronica, you know, you were talking about how it's plastered all over the store. But like, I think it's a lot of people that are buying gifts for someone else that go to the game store. Hey, do you know you can buy and sell? And they're just like, whatever, I just want Mario Kart. And they buy it and they
leave.
You're
saying moms. And you just, it's a 60% moms.
Or brothers or
Uncle Pete.
Yeah, I think it is. And, you know, I think that also might reflect that 40% of gamers are quote unquote hardcore gamer, you know what I mean? Or shoppers. I feel like a lot of people that, like you were saying, Jeff, that are core gamers get their games other ways, or they you know, and they're not in GameStop that regularly. And then the rest of GameStop's regular clients are people that only go maybe twice a year.
Well, maybe that's why they're pushing this resale stuff, because you're only coming in once in a while. Or maybe they're trying to get us to go back into the stores at all, because we don't need to go into the stores anymore to buy physical copies of the games. So when we do come in, they're like, oh, and by the way, if you have stuff you want to get rid of, come back, bring it in. We will give you trade for it.
Yeah.
So who knows?
It's always fun if you go in and they ask you if you want to pre-order something, say yes, and then every game they suggest, keep saying yes. And then when they ring you up, you go, whoa, I didn't know I have to pay for these. Never mind. And it's the meanest. It's the worst thing you can do.
Why would you do that to them?
It seems a terrible person.
They're just trying to make an honest buck.
Yeah. I don't know about honest there, but...
Yeah.
Speaking of trying to make an honest buck, we need to thank our sponsors. And the first of those is MailChimp. MailChimp.com means easy email newsletters. MailChimp helps you design email newsletters, share them on social networks, integrate them with services you already use, and track your results. It's like your own personal publishing platform. So if you have any need to disseminate information to a large group of people, use MailChimp. It's easy. You can customize your newsletter signup to match your brand. You can share your signup on your website and your Facebook page. You can collect signups from an iPad or a laptop and even import existing email lists no matter the format. Personalize what your subscribers see, including signup forms and confirmation emails. And there has never been a better time to try MailChimp with their entrepreneur plan. If you have under 2,000 subscribers, you can send 12,000 emails per month forever. Just visit MailChimp.com/5x5 to learn more. That's MailChimp.com/5x5. We appreciate MailChimp supporting this show, and we hope you support them in return. A couple of other interesting tidbits that happened this weekend, or this last week. Over Comic-Con, we heard that Walking Dead is going to have a season 3 from Telltale Games. I know, Christian, last week you were talking about kind of souring a little bit on season 2. Are you excited that it's continuing into season 3?
I hope it rights the ship. At this point, I would say don't play it. It's now an official pass for me. I feel like, you know, some of the stuff I talked about last week was, you know, the change in protagonist, and also trying to be as general as possible. The change in a lot of cast members, I feel like I don't care about anyone in this season. New people are introduced, new people come and go, and I just don't care. Returning people come back, and then I kind of care about them. I see what they're doing. I think a lot of the formula still works, but a lot of the gray area decisions I'm not invested in. So I'm excited that season 3 is coming. I like good things. Season 1 was my game of the year, but season 2, for me personally, I think there are many better games to be playing, mostly Wolf Among Us, if you want the Telltale experience. You know, but The Walking Dead's never going to die, right? It's going to keep shambling on until until we're sick of it. Hopefully that's not season 3, but whatever.
Veronica, did you play any of season 2?
I'm embarrassed to say that I haven't. I'm too scared to play them.
Are you really?
Yeah, I'm a big baby when it comes to video games. And I've been scared to play. And even my friend, my very dear friend, Gary Whitta, was one of the writers for season 1. And I couldn't get into it. It was just, I was too nervous. And I am embarrassed to say that publicly, but it is true.
Wow.
Gotta be honest.
That's probably a huge compliment to that game, though, because... you know, it definitely is trying to evoke emotion, and it's trying to make you tense. And man, just the few episodes or the first episode of season 2 that I played, it gave me the heebie-jeebies in a way that season 1 never did. So you're probably smart to stay away at this point.
I mean, I almost couldn't finish Gone Home.
Oh,
because
really?
I thought it was going to scare me, and I had to actually ask one of the creators, like, be straight with me right now. Is something going to jump out at me? And no spoilers. I don't want to give any spoilers, but needless to say, I had nothing to fear.
Right.
And I did. So that's kind of how I live my life. In
so did
constant
you go back
fear.
And play Gone Home?
Oh, I did. That? Yeah, totally. Okay. Loved it.
Oh, okay. So just knowing that you weren't in that story was enough for you to be like, okay, mm-hmm. Well, yeah, I can shrug off the tension.
Absolutely.
That's funny.
I'm working through Hannibal on season 1 of Hannibal. It's free on Amazon Instant, and
nope.
it's great. it's really good. But I watched episode 10 last night in bed before I went to sleep. That was the dumbest thing I've ever done. Yeah, Veronica, don't watch it. I don't know how you do with scary movies or TV, but it was disturbing. And I was like, well, not going to bed. And then I played Walking Dead.
Yeah, I am. Oh, man. What was the last one that scared me real bad? I can't remember. I'm better with TV. Like, I can watch Walking Dead, the TV show. But something about the interactive nature of it,
yeah,
freaks me out.
I'm right there with you.
Video games are worse for me.
Yeah, it's because you have to be the one pushing forward. You have to be the one walking into the doom, not necessarily doom, but you know the walking into the awful situation. I can't do those. What is he called? Shallow man, thin man.
Slenderman.
Oh man, nope. That is so hard for me to play because I'm the same way. I don't really have a problem with TV shows and movies that scare me, but making me wander around and then all of a sudden there's a Slenderman behind you. It's I don't like that feeling. It's not fun. anyway, okay. Yeah, he's behind you. He's always behind you.
I just got the hairs on the back of my neck stood up just when you said that just now. So let's not.
All right,
it's
moving
like
on.
The middle of the day right now, bright morning sunshine. And I'm like, Slenderman.
What's the opposite of Slenderman? Disney Infinity, of course. And Disney Infinity characters are being added at a very high rate. And they're rocking Marvel. And they use the occasion of Comic-Con to announce a whole bunch of characters, including the Guardians of the Galaxy, which is fun. Christian, you're excited about this, I know.
I love the art style Disney Infinity 1.0. I thought the art style, they nail it. I think it's great. And now the Marvel characters, oh my gosh, they look fantastic. The game, I feel, leaves a little to be desired just because I think Lego Batman and Lego Marvel were such awesome sandbox toy. I get to play with all my favorite Marvel toys kind of games that I feel like from what I had hands-on time of Disney Infinity 2.0 and Disney Infinity, the first one doesn't quite replicate the fun of those Lego games, but I'll probably be buying some of these toys regardless if I buy the game or not. I think they look great. They announced some villains. It looks like it's the ultimate version of Green Goblin and looks incredible. They have a Venom character, and I'm a 90s kid, you know. I love my Venom. I get it. I know he's a crappy character, but I love my Venom. Are you excited about this at all, Jeff? I know you're a Marvel zombie. Did you play it at all at E3, or are you excited by Disney Infinity at all?
I'd like to. As you said, the toys, the little maquettes are really cool. It's a financial hole that I don't want to start jumping into, and B, the game itself doesn't look like something that would really hook me. I mean, if I had kids, maybe I would be really into it, but I don't know. I find it easy to resist this game's charms, but I don't know. Veronica, what do you think?
I haven't played it either. Should I?
Well, it's sort of a hybrid between Minecraft and Skylanders, in the sense that you got your little toy, you plug your little toy down on the thing, and your little toy appears in the game, and then you run around and you can make stuff, kind of like a Minecraft. You have these components that you can plug together in a playground environment, and you can create your world out of. You can stick Cinderella's castle next to Pirates of the Caribbean harbor, next to the components of each in a sort of Lego-esque building environment. But also there's like little adventures and stuff when you run around and smack people in the face, like Skylanders would. So it's interesting that as a Disney game, they're introducing a whole bunch of these Marvel villains that I think they're going to be sort of... the rough edges are going to be sanded down on all the villains for this game, but that's cool.
Well, they had that with the first one too. Some of the characters from Pirates of the Caribbean weren't good guys. They've always had, quote unquote villains from some of their other properties in this. I think the takeaway for me from Disney Infinity 1.0 was, this is better than it needed to be, right? Like, I mean, you're selling this to a highly, not captive audience, I'm not sure what the right word is, dedicated fan base, and they nailed the look and the aesthetic, and it is largely a kid's game. And, you know, there's the free play mode, which is kind of what Jeff was talking about. It's like the Minecrafty kind of quasi area. And then, you know, like the adventure where you're it's a cars game, so it's kind of like racing, or, you know, you're the Incredibles, so it's a little bit of a beat 'em up. And they're all better than they should have been, if that makes sense. But for me, something like Lego Marvel, again, just does it so well for what I want to get out of the Marvel kind of action figures and toys, that this game, Disney Infinity, I don't think does anything amazing to make it worth playing for its gameplay alone. I think it's the sum of its parts where you're like, cool, I have all these characters I get to be. If you're a, you know, a big Disney fan, it's like you get to play with some of the Disney characters that have never really had a spotlight in a game before, that you get to go run around with and play with. And then, you know, for Marvel, you get to play as Loki or whatever, and that's cool and fun and exciting. And then you get to, of course, own the little figurines and stuff like that. I think it's going to be gangbusters. And someone in the chat said,
yeah,
the Disney Infinity 3.0 is going to be Star Wars. And that's just...
doubt about it. No doubt about it. Yeah,
I just don't need more things. That sounds like a lot of things to have.
Yeah. One last thing I wanted to bring up, speaking of things, is Microsoft doing a free browser-based version of Settlers of Catan called Catan Anytime, which is awesome. I'm a huge fan of Settlers of Catan. It was one of those really gateway games that got me into designer board games. It's ubiquitous now. You can buy it at Target. It's that game, that German game that made the leap over into our country and has become mainstream. It's so mainstream that Microsoft is using it as a sort of main part of their new Rethink Experiences branded thing. And the beta is up now. You can check it out. It's Catan Anytime. You just Google that. It's really slick version of it. It lets you play asynchronous with friends, so you can get notifications via email when it's your turn, and you know what offers people are having for, you know, two sheep for one brick or whatever. And it looks really pretty. This is cool. I dig it. I want more board games free to play in my browser. Evidently, you can play them on almost any kind of device, including consoles that can browse the web, phones that can browse the web. It's HTML5, so it works cross platform. So looks good to me.
Yeah, I'm clicking on it right now. It looks great. I'm using it in Chrome, which is not apparently optimal for them.
For Microsoft, weird.
Yeah, weird. So surprising that they're pissed that I'm not using Internet Explorer right now. But I can't figure out how to make a move. Oh, choose a card to play. Okay.
Yeah, no, it is a little weird. You have to click on, there's a button you have to click on, and then it'll like roll the dice and show you what resources came up. But yeah, it's a little strange, but anything that gets board gaming and really excellent board gaming to more people in front of more eyeballs is thumbs up in my book. Did you check this out, Christian?
Yeah. Oh,
I have not. I wasn't aware it was available until you just talked about it.
That's why I talked about it. Boom.
Yeah, they're saying JLove89 in the chat room is saying that Catan, he calls Catan that surface game at PAX.
Yeah.
So it looks like Microsoft has been utilizing Catan for a while as a tech test for various things,
yeah,
which is interesting.
That is true. Yeah, they had a version, as you said, on Surface that used physical objects that interacted with the Surface. So you were really playing this board game that was a hybrid of physical and digital, and that was really cool too. But yeah, it's like Monopoly if Monopoly were good. You know, it's that kind of.
No, Monopoly is good.
Oh,
what are you talking about?
Not good.
Is this like a board tabletop gamer like snobbery
it is.
Coming out
it
saying
exactly
Monopoly is not good?
Slowly backs away from this conversation. And
no, that's exactly what it is. I turned down my elitist nose at the Ameritrash game that is Monopoly.
You turn it down for what?
Ameritrash? It is classic. Oh, man.
It may
you
be
have
classic.
Saddened me deeply.
You know what else is classic?
It's because something's classic doesn't mean it's good, but I
exactly.
disagree with you on that one. I think Monopoly is awesome.
All right. Well, if you're ever down in LA, come over to my house. I'll show you games that are actually good. And
okay.
And we can, you know. I think you'll agree with me eventually. or I won't let you leave my house. anyway, I think it's cool that Microsoft is doing this, and I hope people check it out. It's free. It's easy to play with your friends, and it's a fantastic game. I hope they add the expansions, because there's a lot of really cool Catan expansions as well. Catan is an empire at this point. It's not even a game. There's so many versions, and yeah, it's everywhere. All right. Enough of Story of the Week. Let's get to the playlist. Ooh, what you playing this week? Tell us. Ooh, what you playing this week? Tell us on the playlist. The playlist is where we talk about the games we've been playing this week. Veronica, what have you been playing?
I have been playing pretty much nonstop Tropico 5.
That's awesome. I've been wanting to try that game. So tell me about it.
I am a Tropico nut. I've been playing Tropico for years. I don't know what it is about that game, but I can just play it for like 8 hours straight and not even realize time has gone by. It's just one of those games for me. And they've made a lot of nice graphical updates. I haven't gotten far enough in the timeline yet of the campaign to see like how many new buildings they've added. I took a peek at it right before it came out a while ago, so I know there's some really great updates that they've made to buildings. I just haven't gotten there yet in the game. But yeah, huge Tropico fan. It's just a really hilarious, fun, you know, game, and I love it.
Well, when people were talking about, and myself included, being disappointed at the last SimCity, everybody was like, well, play Tropico. And I never took that advice. But yes. Do you think like it's the SimCity that's good?
It's very different. It's very different. But yes, I mean, you will not have some of the same frustrations, I think, that you would get in SimCity. I think, you know, I love SimCity. I've been the new one. I haven't played as much recently as I probably should have. You know, I went through what everyone else kind of went through with the launch and the difficulties there. And I did go back to it for a while and did enjoy playing it. But there's just something about Tropico that makes me come back year after year. And I think it's the combination of the humor and the graphic style and the gameplay. It just works for me.
That's awesome. If you're listening to this live and you want to participate and talk about what you've been playing this week, you can call in 512-518-5714. That's 512-518-5714. I got to pick up Tropico. I saw it was on the Steam sale and I almost bought it, but I did not. Christian, what do you...
Yeah, it's fun.
I'm sorry. Go ahead.
I was just saying, yeah, it's fun. You should do it.
Christian, what is on your playlist this week?
So I don't want it to be the Christian talks crap about The Walking Dead. Hopefully people are enjoying it, but I spent a little more time with that. And I will finish the season because I already bought it. And I'm playing it on my iPad, so I play in bed. But Destiny, I was out of town when the beta started, so this was my Destiny beta weekend, and I jumped in. I'm bad with days. Was it last night? He's a listener out of Australia, Adam Ritta, and I jumped in and played together. And apologies, Adam, if I'm saying your last name wrong. I'm a horrible human being. But it was great. I mean, it was, and talk about playing from far, you know, like long distance connection, right? Like everything felt smooth. You know, I think the complaints about the game, well, a couple things. One, I think it's been interesting to listen to people on other shows and stuff you read around the web about the beta and what people are extrapolating what the full game will be. And they're like, well, this is just the beta. They're holding a lot. And oh man, for me, I love the beta. I pre-ordered the digital version for PS4. I want to do the preload. I want to jump in at midnight and help crash the servers. Like I'm having fun with the game, but I just feel like people need to dial back their expectations of to what this full game will be. Like, I think it's great. Don't get me wrong, but I listen to some people on Twitter where it's like, yeah, and in the beta, did you notice this? Oh man, it's going to be crazy when the full game comes out. We're going to be doing X, Y, and Z, and it's going to be, and it's like, I'm pretty sure, and I would love to be wrong, but I'm pretty sure the full game is just going to be a few more worlds of the beta. Like, I don't think
there's
going to be some
beta that you don't think it will be. Well,
it's a level cap of 20, so there's some huge end game planned. Like, the end game for this is going to rival any end game that any MMO has done before, and that's what's going to keep people playing. And I don't think that's the case. I think that when you get to end game, you can continue to go through and have fun with your friends. But I think then they want to move you over to the Crucible. I don't. And it's like, oh, man, Russia. And now there was a gaffe thread about it where it's kind of one area per planet. Right. So like Earth is just Russia. But before that, people were talking about, dude, this is just the Russia level. Imagine everything else on Earth. That's going to be crazy. I hope we get to. And I think, you know, this is Destiny 1. And I think what they're doing, there's already a lot of great stuff in this game. And I think it's just, be realistic. This isn't Destiny 2. You know what I mean? This isn't Assassin's Creed 2. This is Assassin's Creed 1, right? Mm-hmm. This isn't Titanfall 2. It's Titanfall 1. And I think with those expectations, I think Destiny 1 is doing a lot more right for what its franchise is going to be than what Titanfall 1 did for it, or what Assassin's Creed 1 did for it, or even what Mass Effect 1 did for its franchise. I just think people, because it's been an alpha then a beta, people have let their minds explode with possibilities, because this game is a big game, and Bungie talked it up as being a very large game when it was first revealed. But this game to me, you know, in the beta it's the case, and I don't think in the full game it'll be the case either. I don't think this game is Zelda Wii U or is Skyrim, where see a mountain, go get to that mountain. I think it's see a mountain. That sure is cool set dressing for the backdrop of this world.
Like, I think that's an odd comparison, though. I think this game is more. I think I would compare it more to an MMO than either of those two games. I mean, I think mm-hmm. I will be very disappointed if there isn't a lot to do at endgame without me having to jump into the Crucible. I fear that all you build up your character in single player and then bring him over to multiplayer is the sum total of the plan. I hope that's not the case, because I have so much fun playing the cooperative single player stuff and not very much fun playing the PvP stuff. That's just me. But you know, it really wouldn't be any different than a game of Halo if you could just play through the single player campaign with, you know, a couple of friends and then jump over to the multiplayer. I really hope they are embracing this idea of it feeling more like an MMO. But
I think there will be some of that. But I mean, how much time have you spent in the beta already?
A lot.
Ballpark. Right. And that's Russia, and for a little bit this weekend, the moon. So you have five more levels. I mean, I think this is still going to be a big, fulfilling game and you know, feel bigger and broader and more sandboxy MMO-y than Halo did, which was, you know, a very linear story. You have the explore modes and you're tinkering with your loot and your gear and stuff like that, and specializing your class. But I mean, I don't know. I'd love to be wrong, but what I'm in, you know, Veronica, I don't know what side of the coin you're on with this, but like, what do you see as in-game stuff? Like, you hit your level cap and then there's this whole other game out there for a first game? I don't know. I feel like that's unrealistic, but I'd love for you to be right, Jeff, but I just feel like there's no way.
It's been interesting because my husband Ryan has been playing in the beta a bit, and he came into it with zero expectations of anything. And Ryan isn't really, he doesn't play MMOs. He doesn't play online games. He does. I mean, he plays first person shooters primarily. So I think he came into the Destiny beta thinking more along the lines of a first person shooter, and then suddenly having all this stuff that he had to do, like grinding and being around other people and like having to go do stuff. And just watching him kind of realize what kind of game it was. And I agree with the chat room who said that it kind of feels like Borderlands a little bit, because I could see some of those comparisons there. And I haven't actually spent a ton of time in the beta myself yet. So that's something I plan on doing this week when I have the chance on Xbox. So it's been interesting seeing how different people kind of relate to it and what their takeaway is from it.
Was Ryan disappointed by that?
I think he was a little bit, because that's just, he's, you know, he's a Titanfall player. He's a Call of Duty player. He's a Battlefield player. Mm-hmm. And so this isn't really his style of video game that he's typically used to. So he's fine with it, but it's not really what he was looking for from this game.
That's so funny.
But yeah, just coming in, watching someone come in totally blind to what the game is about and not really even realizing what style of game it was and just trying to make sense of everything going on around him was a really fun experiment.
That's a really
potential bad news. Yeah. It's the beta is over.
Oh, yeah.
But it might come back.
Oh, right. Oh, great.
They talked about it might come back, but they said it was great. And I don't know what, maybe they'll do another weekend. I mean, now it's just sitting
away. They got too busy. It just didn't happen. Poop.
Yeah, that's okay.
Well, it's an interesting place that they're trying to straddle that line. And thinking about it from my perspective, because I'm very much the MMO player and not so much the FPS player. So I come at it from the exact opposite position that Ryan does. And I'm trying to force the game into my, you know, square peg, round hole version. Mm-hmm. And so I wonder how much, because they're trying to be a servant of two masters there and straddle that line, I wonder if that may yield, you know, a servant of two masters, you know, what's the freaking cliche I'm trying to reference here? master of none, you know, that it's trying to do everything and not be one thing really great. Although I do think it's really great. I did have a lot of fun with it. So, I think it's a potential problem of alienating the first person shooter players because they're forced to do this MMO stuff and alienating the MMO players because they have to do all, you know, because at the end of the game, they're basically just shoved into first person shooter PvP. I hope that's not the case.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I pre-ordered it. I'm excited about it. But I do think, and, you know, people in the chat also mentioned that they wonder if this game will suffer. I agree that Titanfall did, where the beta came out and was such a huge success. And I feel, and then, you know, the full game came out and people were like almost fatigued by it already because they played so much beta where, you know, I think maybe this game now is, what is it, like a little over a month away to full release. Maybe people will have that appetite back. But it's interesting. And I know, Jeff, we talked about this briefly offline, but I after the beta went public, I played a little bit on the PS3. And you were saying, you know, that the game's, you know, nice and all, but doesn't feel like a next gen or current gen, you know, showpiece thing. Man, I think it's totally playable on the PS3 or the Xbox 360 if you have one and that's all you have and you're interested in this game. I think it's worth checking out. But holy moly, going from the PS4 version to the PS3, I felt like I was playing with like mud on my glasses. everything worked fine. Everything, you know, except for the PS3.
Yeah. Wait, going from where to where? From which console?
PS4 to PS3.
Oh, okay.
It was incredible how, I think, muddier and just overall worse it looked, and like the particle effects and the lighting and stuff like that. I think that's the other part of this problem that people have with this current gen is unrealistic graphical expectations, where I think we've seen some really pretty games and I don't know what people are waiting for like, you know, maybe it's the Gears equivalent or whatever that is, but I'm pretty happy with how Destiny on PS4 and Xbox One looks. I don't know.
Well, you saw stuff at E3. Come on. You saw stuff at E3 that makes this look like mud on the glasses.
Well, I saw The Order.
The Order and the Division. You know, I think those are where we're headed.
The Division doesn't exist yet.
Neither does The Order.
The Order exists more than The Division, I think.
Well,
because the rumor is The Order is only like 4 hours long. So if I played 10 minutes of it, I'm already a quarter of the way through the game.
Troll. Something else that might not exist yet is your online store. But guess what? When you have Shopify, you can make a store just like that. Shopify is hosted e-commerce. It's the solution that allows you to set up and run your own online store in minutes. All you do is pick a template, add your products, pick your payment processor from PayPal to Stripe to Authorize.net, and ship your stuff with just a few clicks. With Shopify, it's easy to sell online and there's no software to download. Host, upgrade, or maintain. Pick from over 100 professionally designed e-commerce templates or create your own with full control over HTML and CSS. There are no bandwidth limits and no need to worry about scaling when your store becomes popular. And every Shopify store is level 1 PCI DSS compliant and totally secure. Also, Shopify has just announced their Shopify Point of Sale. That's an iPad application that lets you sell your Shopify store's products in a physical retail setting. It's really easy. You just browse your store's catalog, pick a customer's products, swipe their credit card, and print their receipt or send it through the email. I always put the in there like I'm 1,000 years old. You can automatically sync products and orders, and there's only one dashboard to manage all your retail and online stores. So get Shopify's point of sale hardware, which includes a credit card reader, cash drawer, iPad stand, and receipt printer. Order online and shipping is free. Go to shopify.com/5x5 and you'll get 3 months free. That's 3 months free at shopify.com/5x5. Check them out today. All you need is something to sell. I'm going to take a call because we got several people on the line. We have somebody from the 630 area code. What's your name, where you're calling from, and what's on your playlist this week?
Hey, guys. This is Ani. I'm calling from the Garden State of New Jersey. So a couple things on my playlist. I've been playing Bravely Default, and it's been really enjoying that. With kind of the way everything's been going, I haven't had a chance to check out a lot of new stuff, but I've been enjoying a lot of the PlayStation Plus games that they've been getting out every month. And it's funny you guys were talking about the horror games. The one game that I've been trying out recently was Outlast, which, you know, if you think that you know, Slender or those other games were scary, this one, I mean, I only played like an hour or two of it, and then I have to shut it off like every 10, 15 minutes because it's too much of a... It's too much of it. I can't even do it.
Yeah, that doesn't sound fun to me at all. Tell me a little bit about Bravely.
Bravely. I mean, I love playing JRPGs, and what I really like about it is that they take a lot of the elements of old school RPGs. They kind of have a respect for that old school RPG and old school JRPG even. But there's a lot of little things that they do that modernize it in a way that's really cool. Like, for example, one of the things like with RPGs back in the day was random encounters. And, you know, you sometimes walk into an area, and that can be annoying if you're trying to, you know, grind, or if you're trying to get to the next area
and
randomly encounter these enemies. Exactly. So what the game does is that it actually lets you decide the encounter rate of enemies. So if you want to go through an area without even having... for example, if your guys are low on health and you want to get back to the main town, but you don't want to run into any enemies, you can just set the encounter rate to zero. You won't find any enemies, and you'll get back to your area, and that's really cool. But then if you want to, like, say, grind up and kind of level up your characters, you can set the encounter rate to basically twice as high. So every two steps you take, you encounter an enemy, and that can be really useful for grinding. And even in the battles, you can speed up or slow down the battle speed and little things like that. So that's what I thought that was really interesting about it, was that even though, like, on its surface, it feels like this is a JRPG that's just harkening back to it, it's the little things underneath that modernize that formula that really helped sustain the experience.
Very cool. That does sound awesome. I'm going to have to give that a try. I love that idea of I'm going to set the encounter chance to 100%. It's like instantly everywhere you look is monsters. It's
walk two steps, the theme music kicks in, you're like,
yeah, I just love
I just
the idea.
Assume it sounds like that.
Yeah, it sounds a really cool game. Really cool game. Thanks for the call. That was excellent. On my playlist is still Divinity. I've been playing that like a madman. I'm probably about 50 hours in at this point, and it is the love of my life. It is, I get up in the morning giddy to have some time to play that game. I know people are probably sick of me talking about Divinity Original Sin, but it is everything I've ever wanted. But also, this week, I see that, Veronica, you've also been playing Hearthstone, and Curse of Naxxramas came out early in the week, which is really exciting, the single-player content for a multiplayer game. And I've been really impressed with the package, the whole presentation, the way that this expansion works, and the boss battles, because they're so interesting and different, and it's really something that a game like Magic the Gathering cannot do, in that because it's digital only, you can create these boss monsters that have their own cards and their own decks and things that you don't even know what's coming. You know, when I play against other human players, I see that it's a paladin or a shaman or whatever, and I have a sense of what could potentially be in their deck. First time I fought these boss monsters, I had no idea what was coming my way. And that is a really cool experience. And they don't have to worry about balancing, because they can make the monsters have crazy superpowers that are super frustrating, but really make you rethink your strategies and maybe even create specific decks to deal with exactly what that boss can do. It's just a really cool way to flip the switch, or excuse me, flip the script is what I mean to say, on the game. You know, change it up and make you play in a way, if you've been in a gaming rut in, with that game, if you've been in a specific strategic play style, now you have to account for new variables. So it's really, really cool.
I'm not good at Hearthstone. I'm just going to put that out there. I'm trying to get better. And in fact, I'm working very closely with the guys from The Angry Chicken, which is the Hearthstone podcast, awesome. To try to figure out my strategy. And I had the coolest experience this weekend. And I don't want to tell the whole thing because it's all on the TortureCast podcast, which is the San Francisco Giants podcast.
Awesome.
But I actually had a very brief conversation, me and Dills, one of the hosts over there, with Hunter Pence of the Giants about Hearthstone during batting practice on Saturday. And he's, you probably know, he's a big gamer and he's doing a whole Twitch channel now.
That's awesome.
And we talked a little bit about Hearthstone with him and he asked me what I played and I almost melted. And I, so it was really, really cool. And I have not tried Naxx yet. And because I thought since I'm so bad that I couldn't do it. And then they were like, no, just try. You'll be fine. Just, you know, on normal, you'll be great. So I'm going to maybe dig into that today.
Well, it's interesting. You know, you're an old WoW player, right, Veronica?
Oh, yeah. Long time.
And yep. Anybody that's been in Naxx as an instance, as in WoW, it's really, really fun how they've reimagined those same boss encounters in the context of a card game. And there's this wonderful thing that Blizzard is doing there where it's this layer of awesome card game that it's approachable to anybody that's willing to try that kind of game. But for people that are invested in the Blizzard ecosystem already, there's another layer that is informative and fun and playful and self-reflexive that makes the experience even cooler, which is really, really awesome, I think. Anyway.
I just want to say that Hunter Pence is forever of the Houston Astros. I don't care if he won. He's from Texas. We brought him up. We gave him a shot early. He played really well. And then, like everything the Astros do, we let him go win a World Series somewhere else.
Yeah, he's really blossoming here in San Francisco. So we appreciate you setting us up for that.
No problem.
That was helpful.
We have good farm talent, and then we don't know what to do with him. And then we go, hey, go win somewhere. And then we'll bring him back when he's like 40. And we'll pay him too much. So.
I'm sure he has that to look forward to. Not a bad way to end a career.
Yeah, it's pretty good.
Getting paid too much and being awesome.
There's one other thing I wanted to bring up in the playlist. And that is, with all of the fallout last week from the International Dota tournament, and I watched more of that stream than I had at any previous MOBA stream. And I was sort of getting the itch to play. The itch was not bold enough to actually try Dota, however, because I'm very intimidated by that game. I'm not too proud to say. But what it did result in is me trying Heroes of the Storm. I'd have the Heroes of the Storm alpha sitting on my hard drive for a while, and I hadn't really touched it because I'd had all these other things to play. And I was finally like, you know what? I should try it. Alex Albrecht, my buddy, and a couple other friends of mine were sort of getting into it at the same time. So we all jumped in. And it's pretty darn fun. I know everybody's like, well, then try League and try Dota. And well, I'm starting with my baby steps. And I think that the way that Blizzard is positioning this game is to be the intro MOBA for people that aren't already, you know, part of that crowd. And it's working for me. It brings you into the game in a really smart way. It introduces I played MOBAs before. It's not that I was completely MOBA virgin, but it still expresses the quirks of its play style in a really clear, direct, understandable way. And I like it. The fact that I'm not feeling like so much of a lone wolf because your entire team levels up at the same time rather than one person trying to get last hits and figuring out who's going to level at what rate and me, you know, being level 2 and somebody on my team being level 10 and feeling like I'm terrible. With Heroes of the Storm, everybody in your team levels at the same time. So you're in this race against the other team, but you're contributing and you're benefiting from all your team's play at the same time, which I like. And there's a lot of each map has its own specific mechanic. So there's some maps where you're trying to harvest certain items and then deliver them to a spot to manifest a really big monster that will fight on your behalf. Or, you know, there's a pirate ship one where you're trying to get doubloons and you pay this pirate and then he fires cannons at your enemies. So there's a lot of those gimmicks, I guess you could call them, that hardcore MOBA players are, I think, probably turned off by. But I find them fun. They create little contact points between the teams on the map. And it's clear. It's clear as to what I'm supposed to be doing at any given time. You know, I played a lot of matches of this game over the weekend, a lot of them, and I lost by far the majority of them with my team of noobs. But when we did win, it was really, really fun. And even in loss, I was still having a good time, which is, you know, I think there's high praise for something. There's a lot of games where it doesn't feel fun if you're not winning. And I was having fun with Heroes of the Storm. So I'm excited to see how that game evolves. Does anybody else have any experience with that?
I feel like I'm losing friends to MOBAs. It's just like people talk about their friends. Instead of like, oh man, like, I don't know if anybody watched Undateable or whatever, but like that common theme of like, yo, I'm the single party dude and all my good dude friends are getting married. This is the worst. I'm like, yo, I'm a guy that likes video games and all my friends are playing MOBAs. This is the worst.
It's true, man. It's a disease. It's a time sink and you want to get better at it. And there's, you know, daily quests, at least in Heroes of the Storm, there's these daily quests and they just, I mean, literally as I was playing it, I've only been playing it less than a week, but as I was playing it, there was a huge update to the game that added in this leveling system for individual heroes. So now time investment in playing a specific hero yields results in him having more traits that I can buy during the game and I get gold that way. And so it's like, oh, well, I guess I got to play all of them and I got to do my daily quests. And, you know, it's that same loop of investment that I get sucked into with MMOs. But
those games take the opposite approach of like, you know, if you get poison ivy or poison oak or like a bug bite, they're like, I know it itches, but don't scratch it.
Yeah.
All these games are like, it itches. You better scratch it.
Just scratch the hell out of it. Just keep scratching it.
keep scratching. I don't know if Heroes is positioned. I mean, I think it is currently like an entry level in terms of maybe initial complexity, where I feel like Dota 2, you know, for better or worse, it's super complex, but also because it's been around for 20 years or whatever, right? Like it's been iterated on and the same game since whatever it was, Warcraft 3? Is that kind of the first spawn of Dota? Mm-hmm. People know this better than I do for sure. But, you know, I don't think people, they want you playing Heroes and then graduating to League or graduating to Dota. I mean,
no.
I hope to imagine that the goal is they get more people in, because it's a little maybe easier to get in, but then they keep you there and keep all your money.
Well,
right?
It's the like wow of MOBAs. Mm-hmm. You know, it's not the first. Mm-hmm. It's just the easiest to get into and the one that they're hoping most people will stay into. You know, it's like they're trying to do to in Dota and League what they did to EverQuest. You know, it's like, well, we're softening the edges. We're making the game super accessible. We're trying to bring in a whole new audience to these types of games. And so far what I've seen, it's pretty effective at doing that. We've got another call I would like to take. We have somebody on the line from a 913 area code. What's your name? Where are you calling from? And what's on your playlist?
Hey, Jeff, this is Mr. Kelso, Stephen Kelso from Kansas City in the chat room. And I have been playing a horribly addicting game that's actually really horrible. I've been playing Thief on the Xbox One, and it is amazing and awful all at the same time.
Explain.
Well, it's like, you know, they make these beautiful games for the Xbox. I've been playing the Destiny Beta 2, and I've been enjoying that. And I'm like, that game is really pretty. But then I go back, and this was supposed to be a next-gen title, and it's just ugly. But it's addicting. You just keep on a play and enjoy the story and just kind of go down. It's really kind of one of my missed games. I think it came out in March. And I think that anybody who can find it cheaper ought to go back and play it, especially if they like those first-person sneaky thief type games. It's like a poor man's Dishonored.
Isn't that Dishonored crazy though, that Thief is now the poor man Dishonored, where right in one game Dishonored flipped the script.
Yeah.
And I played Thief And I agree with a lot of those comments. Like, it does so much so well, but the parts that leave you hanging and the parts where you're like, insta-fail basically because you are horrible at combat if you get discovered. Like, if you have played Dishonored, it's really hard to play Thief, or however, whatever you used to call it, Jeff, Thief. It's really hard to play again, and you have to reset your mind and be like, oh wait, no, I can't get out of this. Well, ruined. Now I got to reload. And I find some of the checkpoints to be punishing in that game as you get deeper into it. I eventually hung it up maybe halfway through because I just kind of moved on to bigger and better. But it's worth checking out for sure.
Yeah, I think I don't really have any desire to play that game. It looks like all the things that I don't like about those games, it emphasizes instead of the things that I do like about Dishonored and Deus Ex and games where they give me the option of being stealthy. I just don't like beating my head against the wall to... you know, have to do the stealthy thing.
I am so bad at stealth games. Like, even like stealth portions of the Assassin's Creed games, I just, I
you
always
can't
just
be
end
ignored,
up shooting
Veronica.
My way through.
That's what it is. You can't be ignored.
So you're saying it's an ego thing?
No.
Look at me as I kill you from the shadows. See the face of your impending doom. Yeah, that's exactly how I live my life.
Awesome.
Pretty much.
So, like, you know, in this, sorry for the basic questions, but do you guys have both a PS4 and an Xbox One?
I do not have a PS4.
So your Xbox One. So what, going into this generation, you know, like, what are you excited about? Or what games do you feel like have, I was giving Jeff a hard time earlier, but have, like, realized that promise of new gen? You know, like, aside from Mass Effect, which I do think is 2017, at least they brought up the Mako at Comic-Con, right? At least it was better than their E3 conference where they're like, we're making one. And that's kind of it. I mean, do you have games on your radar that are like, this is awesome, this is fun and exciting? Like, what's your jam?
No, I don't really have anything on my radar right now, which is really weird. Like, I just don't, there's nothing, like, I go to the store even, I look at Xbox One titles, and nothing is grabbing me. You know, I haven't been excited about a game since Black Flag, basically. So I don't know what to look forward to anymore. Maybe I'm just not in the news enough for console stuff, but there's just nothing that's really grabbing me right now.
Well, there's always an Assassin's Creed coming, and that's always the case, and it is the case now. So
I know.
If you're tied into that loop, at least you don't have long to wait for new Assassin's Creed.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm trying to think off the top of my head right now what is, like, really getting me excited, and there's just nothing pops into mind.
I think a lot of people are going through that. If you're not brought in by Destiny, I think is the next big thing, and then we don't need to dive into it, but even some of these October games now are getting delayed and pushed. And
what about Dragon Age? For me, you like Dragon Age, right, Veronica?
Yeah, I did. I've played all the Dragon Age games. I really enjoy those, so I'm looking forward to that. I guess just, like, on the immediate horizon, there's, you know, stuff coming out in the next few months. When is that coming out?
It just got pushed back to November 21st.
Yeah.
Which is basically them saying,
so that's still a ways
away.
What's
the latest day we can put this out and still make Christmas? It's like, right before Thanksgiving? Okay, fine, cool. Let's do it. Yeah.
Yeah.
Which is a little worrisome.
Assassin's Creed, though, I love those games so much. So I'm always up for a good AC.
Well, there's always, I feel like that's just a yearly occurrence. There's always one around the bend. We have to thank our last sponsor before I get too crazy far down the road here, and that is Mac Mini Colo. Mac Mini Colo is the original Mac Mini hosting company. They make it so easy to set up and maintain without the hassle of a setup fee, and they have a world-class data center, currently hosting hundreds of Mac Minis for satisfied customers from over 40 different countries around the world. Mac Mini Colo makes sure you get great, high performance, no matter where you are. Never worry about running out of space because you can get up to 2 terabytes of storage and up to 16 gigs of RAM. And for those who want even more power, be sure to check out macprocolo.net, where they provide colocation services for your new Mac Pro. So just remember, Mac Mini Colo is where low cost meets high performance to create the perfect Mac server. Just visit macminicolo.net/5x5. That's macminicolo, macminicolo.net/5x5 to learn more. All right, looking at my watch here, I noticed that look at that. It's tabletop time.
right now, right now.
Veronica, I'm guessing that you, since you love Monopoly, you're not exactly playing a lot of board games. I don't mean to be condescending.
You are so mean.
I don't mean to be condescending. I really don't.
I can list a number of board games that I own, like, on one hand, and those include the Game of Thrones game.
Oh, which one? Is it the Fantasy Flight Game of Thrones game? Because that's awesome.
The big square one. I don't know.
There's a number of them.
Is that a company that makes games?
Yeah. Does it have like a big map that you or is it a card game?
Yes.
Based game? Okay.
No, it's a card based game, but it also has a map.
I think it's the Fantasy Flight. That's a great game. Have you played it?
I sat down with Tom and Roger one night and we tried to play for 3 hours. We could not figure out the rules.
Heartbreak. It makes me sad.
So maybe I'll come down to LA sometime and we can all get together and you can show us how to actually play.
I like that
That'd
idea.
Be great.
I like that idea. I actually wanted to...
I have the Law and Order board game. That's pretty awesome.
Do you decide whether it's law or order at any given point?
No, it has to be both.
Oh, it has to be both.
It has to be both.
How little I know.
And then I have like Cards Against Humanity. Yeah. Does that count?
It does. It absolutely counts. That's a great game.
All right.
Yeah, for sure. I don't mean, I'm such an a-hole. I don't mean to be that way. But it's funny that you bring that up because this week I had the awesome occasion to hang out with some of those people you just referenced. Tom Merritt and Brian Brushwood came over to my house. They were both happened to be in LA. Well, Tom lives here, but of course, if people come to my house, I force them to play board games. And I just kind of wanted to mention a couple of the games I brought up because I did not bring out the gigantic 3-hour, intense games. And I think that's a lesson for people. If you're listening and you're like me and you're into this hobby and you kind of want to welcome people into it, you got to know your audience and you got to understand what the evening is about. And sometimes it's too much to bring in Agricola or Power Grid or, whatever, these crazy intense games. So what I did, and I just wanted to mention it as maybe digging these games because the coolest thing happened. The day after Brian went back to Austin, where he lives, he sent me a text message saying, "Hey, I just got online and ordered both those games from Amazon because I want to play them with my family," which I feel is like the biggest win you can possibly have. Anyway, so the games that I've talked about at least one of them before, and that's Love Letter, which is a really fun game, a very simple game. I think you can get it for under $10. Comes in a little velvet pouch, which is ridiculous, but actually they have a bunch of variants of it. One of which I think that's about to come out is a Game of Thrones variant where it's themed Game of Thrones, but it's very small number of cards. I think it's only, 16 cards, maybe less. Anyway, you're trying to get your love letter to the princess and all the game involves is taking a card and playing a card, but you're trying to guess what cards are in other people's hands so you know which cards to play out of your hand. It's very simple, but it has a ton of depth and a ton of strategy for being such an inexpensive, small number of cards game. So I recommend that one. And the other game that I love, 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 and I always play, it's a great filler, plays really quickly, is a game called For Sale, which is a game about buying and then flipping houses. And the best thing about For Sale, the coolest thing about For Sale is it's a game played in two phases. First, you all auction, you have to start with some money, and you auction off all the cards that are properties in the deck. So you are auctioning these properties, owning properties, and the properties have different values on them. So you're, trying to maximize your money to get the coolest properties. Then in phase two, you take those properties and you play a game of sort of face down chicken to try to then flip them back into money. And the best thing about For Sale is that you can teach the first part without telling people about the second part. And it's this wonderful reveal, which is how I did with Tom and Brian, is this wonderful reveal of, okay, this part was really fun. You guys have a good time? Yeah. Well, now the game gets really interesting and now you have to flip the houses. And so everybody's like, whoa, crazy. And you get to the end of that game and they're like, oh my God, we got to play that immediately because now I understand. And it's this wonderful sort of progression of learning that game. It plays really fast. It's really simple and it's an excellent game. So I highly recommend that one.
Did you... did you get burned by the housing crash when you flipped the houses, or did like you realize there was water damage and you just didn't, you weren't expecting
yeah,
it?
Yeah, there were a lot of jokes.
Can you play as a spectator? What is it called? Not spectator, speculator.
Yeah. Speculator.
Speculator.
Yeah, there were a lot of jokes when I revealed the second part, and they're like, okay. And then the big reveal is the third part of the game. Everybody goes to the poorhouse, and the government comes and repossesses your house. Yeah. So there was a.
When you play
the house
board games,
has mold. Good right. luck.
When you play games with Jeff, you often play as the spectator because I'm just kidding.
No, you played.
Oh, I see what you did,
Christian,
there.
You played For Sale with us, right? I use that game to try to hook people into the hobby a lot. So
no, that's your free heroin sample that
you
give
dug
out.
It right.
Yeah. It's fun. I have a game coming my way, Jeff.
I heard about this.
Oh, do you also have that game coming your way? Or are we supposed to play together?
I think we're supposed to play together, but I'm not sure.
We haven't played, but teaser. So I always love it when people create things. We talk about this. You actually talked about it some on your other show, which I'll go ahead and plug because you don't plug your own things. We have concerns that you do with Anthony Carboni is on available as a podcast. And you guys talked about, you know, creation versus consumption. Mm-hmm. I always like it when people create and make things and put things out there. And, you know, listener / Twitter friend person that I interact with via the internet created a game. It's called Knee Jerk. I've yet to play it, but we're going to get a copy. And I told him, I was like, I'm not a big board game guy, but I'll play it and be honest about my feelings on it.
Well, I've been trying to get you to come over and play board games for a while now. Schedules are difficult. But another long time ago fan of the Totally Rad Show made a board game that's been in the works for like 5 years and sent me it, and I wanted to just sort of surprise you and play it. It's called Age of Soccer, and I'm in it. I'm a card.
What?
It's a game of soccer, and you play down players on your team, and one of them is Kanata, and it's me. It's a picture of me.
Are you the Dan, you know, like in Street Fighter card? It's like someone's like, oh, I got the Kanata.
Yeah, I probably am. I'm probably the worst card you can get. I'm like the old maid in Old Maid.
Well, let's figure it out. I know you go out of town soon, but let's figure it out. I'll have Rogue Legacy on my Vita to hold me over until you get back. And we'll make a date. We'll make a date of it. You can even come over. You can come out to Paradise.
It's quite a drive.
Oh, it's a little play date. It's so cute.
Yeah, I'm actually headed to my bachelor party weekend this weekend, so it won't be anytime soon. But if I don't come back the same man, you'll know why, listeners.
If he doesn't come back, we'll know why.
Exactly. Well, Veronica, this was awesome. Thank you so much for being a part of the show this week. Really have enjoyed it. And where can people find your creations if they're interested?
Sure. Well, I do a podcast called The Sword and Laser. So if you like sci-fi fantasy stuff, we actually just had Jeff on the show. Your episode is going up tomorrow.
Oh, awesome.
So that's very exciting.
Yeah.
So yeah. And I do that with Tom. We've been doing that show for about 8 years.
Wow.
We're a podcast, book club, video show, book publisher. We do the whole deal. So if you like sci-fi fantasy, come over and see us sometime, swordandlaser.com. I also just started doing a weekly gaming segment over on the morning stream on the Frog Pants Network. So 8:15 in the morning, approximately Pacific time, every Monday. You can jump in for some video game talk with me and Scott Johnson, Brian Ibbett. A lot of fun. We just did our first episode today, or I did my first segment on their show today.
Congrats.
So it's been a video game filled day so far, which is always very exciting. And otherwise, I'm just at Veronica on Twitter, or you can follow all my stuff at about.me/Veronica.
I'm such a huge fan of all the things you do. I can't believe it's been 8 years since Sword and Laser started. That's crazy.
I know.
How does that happen?
It is crazy.
Yeah.
It's time flies when you're having fun.
Yeah. It's a great show. And as a fan of reading and books in general, I just love what you guys are doing and have been doing for so long. And it was a real treat for me to be part of the show too. So hope people check that out. And Christian, what about you? What's going on for you this week?
If you're listening to this live in Los Angeles, there's a great show. Jay Davis has numerous great shows around the LA area. I'm doing his show at the Parlor tonight in Hollywood, which is always fantastic. I don't know if it was last week or the week before, but, you know, Chris Rock has been there working out stuff, and I'm excited to do that. I'm trying to think what else is coming up. The usual, you know, follow me on Twitter is the best way, S-P-I-C-E-R, which Nintendo still will not let be a username. and then the shows that I put on regularly is Improv versus Stand-Up, which is at the Upright Citizens Brigade Theater here in Los Angeles. And if you're in New York, good friend Boris Hyken hosts that for us when I'm not out there. And it's awesome. I'm super proud of the show. It's great. And then what's new, if you want to see, if you're interested in how, if you're interested in stand-up comedy the way you are about video games, it's kind of an inside how the sausage is made about stand-up comedy with some of comics you know, or what is that guy from kind of thing. It's called What's New, and it's on the Nerdist Podcast Network. So check it out. Mr. Kanata, I know you had your Lucy review come up.
Yeah.
What's new on that front? What's coming?
Well, I'm seeing Guardians of the Galaxy tonight, and so
my review
will be up tomorrow of that. I cannot wait.
Mine's up right now.
Yours isn't.
It's amazing. It's amazing. It's going to be amazing.
It better be amazing.
It's amazing.
I have heard nothing but good things, and I could not be more excited to see that. So, yeah, check my YouTube channel. That's youtube.com/KanataJeff. And yeah, as Christian said, We Have Concerns is up and it's rocking. I'm super proud of it. I think it's a fun show. It's a very different kind of thing. It's a comedy show with Anthony Carboni and I talking about random stuff for just 20 minutes of your time, three times a week. So give it a listen. WeHaveConcerns.com is where you find that. And you can always follow me on Twitter at Jeff Kanata with two N's and one T. All right, that's going to do it for this week. Thanks a lot to everybody who called in and participated and sent in stories. We appreciate it. We appreciate your kind reviews on the iTunes and your subscription and all that stuff as well. It certainly does help our show. Thanks to everybody. And until next week, think about what you put out into the world. Make it a better place.